being. From the 8th chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we are continuing from a previous visit. These prayers are from text 18 to 43 in this chapter. And on my previous visit, I thought that we had covered up to verse 27, and therefore we had done 28 and 29 yesterday. But it appears that I have not done 27, so I will be discussing verse 27 today. Thanks to Dharmadhenu Prabhu for pointing out. So, we'll talk about this very beautiful verse. First Canto, 8th chapter, 27th verse.
Namo kinchana vittaya nivritta guna vrittaye Atma ramaya shantaya kaivalya pataye namaha.
Queen Kunti prays as follows. My obeisances are unto you, who are the property of the materially impoverished. You have nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the material modes of nature. You are self-satisfied, and therefore you are the most gentle and are master of the monists. So Queen Kunti begins this verse by offering her obeisances. Namaha. Nam dhatu. Nam means to offer your respects to someone. When we say namaskar or namaste, namaha aste or namahakar, so we are actually offering our humble obeisances. Nowadays, of course, it is a very ordinary thing to just say namaste or namaskar. But that word namaskar means a lot. It means that we are actually offering our most respectful obeisances unto that person. But normally it is done just as a formality, like good morning, good evening, hi, hello, so namaskar, namaste. So when we greet somebody with namaste, namaskar, we must remember it comes from the word namaha. Nama om bhakti vishnupadaya krishna preshthaya bhutal namaha. So it's a very important word of offering respect. So Queen Kunti begins this verse by offering her respects. To whom is she offering respect? Krishna, of course. But what does she address Krishna as? Akinchana vittaya. He who is the wealth or the property, vitta means property or wealth, of those who are akinchana, without anything material. And the same Krishna is nivritta guna vrittaye. He himself is far beyond the three modes of material nature. He has no hankering for any material enjoyment in this world. He is atmarama, fully self-satisfied. Shanta, he is peaceful and gentle. Kaivalya pataye namaha. He is the lord of everyone. He is even the lord of those who seek impersonal liberation, who want to merge into the impersonal Brahman, the Brahma Jyoti of the Lord. Now in this world we see that everyone, without exception, is always in the process of giving up something to accept something else. Please reflect on this. All of us have been doing it, we are doing it, and we will continue to do it. We give up something that we consider lower for something higher. For example, in childhood, one is attracted very much to play. Whole day one wants to play. But then, one has to start studies. One gives up one's childish play to accept something higher. Our education begins. Similarly, a student in his student days engages in a lot of so many activities. But now that he starts working on a job or a business, then he gives up one kind of life, he accepts another kind of life. He renounces one kind of life, accepts another. An employee in a company, he gives up that job to accept another job that gives more money. So all the time, people in this world are renouncing one thing to accept another thing which they consider to be better than what they had before. So also, the devotees of the Lord give up something to accept something higher. So what do the devotees give up? They give up material pleasures. They give up the sense gratification that is offered by the Vishaya, by the sense objects in this world. And what do they do instead? They accept the higher pleasure of spiritual life. Why would great spiritualists give up all the things of this world unless they were accepting or unless they were experiencing something much higher? Our great sannyasis, stalwarts, great mahatmas, devotees in history, were they all fools that they gave up their wealth, their kingship, their position, their queens, their everything, if they did not experience a higher pleasure? It is only because they had that higher pleasure, param drishtvani vartate, that they were able to easily give up these things. Maharaj Bharat, it is said, gave up all these things like a person passes through and forgets about it. He gave up his worldly belongings with that spirit. Totally disconnected himself from his previous belongings and identifications. We see in history of our Sampradaya also, the six Goswamis. They all came from very aristocratic backgrounds. Not only Brahmin families, but also they were very learned. They had very good bodily features. And they were very wealthy. And they held high positions in society. Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami were like the Prime Minister and Finance Minister of the Nawab Hussain Shah of Bengal. They had huge houses, large amount of wealth and following, very much respected in their society. But when they received the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they left everything. Just like we pass by a piece of grass or a broken piece of glass on the street. Similarly, the Shad Goswamis, they gave up all their wealth and everything. In the Shad Goswami Ashtakam, we hear this wonderful prayer. Tyaktva turna mashesha mandalapati shrenim sadatuchavat bhutvadina ganesha kau karunaya kaupina kanthashitau gopi bhavar samritabdhilahari Kallola magnau muhur Vande rupa sanatanau raghu yugau Shri jiva gopalakau. So in this verse, we are told very beautifully about exactly how the six Goswamis renounced everything. They were on the highest platform of devotional service. And therefore, tyaktva, they gave up, turnam, very quickly, ashesha mandalapati, shrenim, their aristocratic circle of friends, their social circle. How did they give it up? Tuchavat, as if it was insignificant, condemned. Sada tuchavat, they gave it up. And what did they accept instead? Bhutva Dina Ganesha Kau Karunaya. Dina Gana. Dina means those who are helpless, fallen. Karunaya. Out of compassion for those who are very needy and fallen, who are very much suffering in this world, they gave up all this. They didn't give up for some selfish motive. But they gave up all this aristocratic circle of friends, their wealth, their position, their prestige, everything they gave up. Bhutva dina gana ishakau karunaya, out of karuna, out of compassion. And in the process, they were most happy, they were most blissful. And although they were wearing only kaupina kantha ashritau, kaupina means just a loincloth, kantha means just they had a torn quilt, ashritau, they took shelter of only these two belongings. And what was their ecstasy coming from? Gopi bhava rasamrita. Rasamrita abdhi. Abdhi means ocean. So they were swimming kallola lahari. Kallola lahari means the waves. They were swimming in the waves of a particular ocean. What kind of ocean? Gopi bhava rasa amrita abdhi. The ocean of the nectar of the mellows of Gopi bhava. What the gopis were experiencing in Vrindavan in deep separation from Krishna, that very exalted state of devotion, they were experiencing that. And that was giving them such intense ecstasy that for them all the things of this world were absolutely insignificant. So that is how many, many other great souls, not just the six Goswamis, but also others, they gave up the things of this world. In this regard, Srila Prabhupada told one story, a little humorous story also, very instructive at the same time. Some of you may have heard it also. That when Sanatan Goswami was doing his bhajan in Vrindavan, one businessman who had heard about his potency, he had heard that there was a very great Mahatma, and he came there seeking his blessings. As you know, materialistic people are always seeking materialistic blessings from sadhus. Many times devotees also have the experience. They will say, Swamiji, they will go and tell sannyasis, please give us ashirvad. What kind of ashirvad they want? They want the ashirvad that materialistically they will prosper. One time Srila Prabhupada was traveling in the first class compartment of train in India, going from one place to another. And one gentleman was there with his family, and he was hovering outside the door. The devotees were trying to tell him that you can't see Srila Prabhupada, but somehow he caught Srila Prabhupada's eye. So then Prabhupada called him in, please come. He realized that he was trying to meet him. He called him in. So he said, he offered full prostrated obeisances. And then he said, Swamiji, this is my family, this is my son, my daughter, my wife, this is... So, please bless us. Prabhupada immediately understood what kind of blessings he wanted. He wanted materialistic blessings. So Srila Prabhupada said, yes, I will certainly give blessings. But my blessings result in this. And he pointed to his devotees who were wearing saffron robes and shaven headed. And very quickly the gentleman took leave from Srila Prabhupada and departed from that cabin. And the disciples had a hearty laugh about it. So then there was this businessman who approached Sanatan Goswami in Vrindavan and said, Mahatmaji, I have heard that you have a very precious stone and you are a sadhu living as a Babaji in Vrindavan. So what need you have for these precious things? So please give it to me because I am a worldly man, I am a businessman. Therefore, I have interest in these things. So Sanatan Goswami said, alright, I have a touchstone. Do you know what a touchstone is? Whatever it touches, it makes it into gold. So yes, I have a touchstone. There it is lying in that, near all the garbage over there. Garbage? Alright, anyway, the businessman said, what does it matter, garbage or anywhere, so long as I get the touchstone, it's fine. So he got the touchstone and he was thrilled. And he went on making everything into gold. And he went practically mad with ecstasy. Just gold, 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 gold everywhere. But as you know, any amount of gold in this world cannot satisfy. Gold cannot give you happiness and peace of mind. So soon, in the midst of all his volumes of gold, this businessman started thinking, I have so much gold, I am not satisfied. But this Mahatma to whom I went in Vrindavan, he had kept this touchstone in the garbage. If he has kept this in the garbage, it means that he has something that is much more valuable. So let me go and get that from him. So he went to him, and Sanatan Goswami asked him, he said, so now what do you want? I gave you touchstone, are you not satisfied? He said, yes, yes, I'm satisfied, but Swamiji, I have one question. That you kept this touchstone in the garbage, it means that you have something much more valuable. So please give me that. So you really want it? He said, yes, yes, please give me. But I have one condition. What is that? You have to throw this on Jamuna first. If you throw this touchstone in the river, then I will give you the more precious thing that I have. What? Yes, you have to give up this to get the higher thing. So this person was in a quandary. Great dilemma. What to do? Here is already something existing that is creating gold. And here is a promised reward of something higher. He didn't know what to do. And that was not yet in hand. So anyway, after a lot of agonizing moments, he decided, with a heavy heart, he went and he threw it in the river, somehow with great difficulty. And then he came back and said, yes, Mahatmaji, I have thrown it in the river. So now, please give me that jewel, the priceless thing that you have that is much more precious than this touchstone. And Sanatana Goswami said, yes, certainly I will give it to you. Here it is. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Swamiji, don't play the fool with me. Don't joke with me. I have already thrown it in the river. Said, yes, I mean it. And then Sanatana Goswami went on to explain to him. He gave him some divine instruction. And explained how the things of this world actually can never satisfy one. Always there is dissatisfaction, because inherently the things of this world are not capable of satisfying one. Eventually the businessman understood, and I presume that he became a devotee of the Lord. This story is very instructive for us, that Sanatana Goswami was not a fool to give up this touchstone. It was factually because he was experiencing something so much more greater and better that he was able to consider this touchstone as being absolutely insignificant. In the Bhagavad Gita also, it is explained that one who sees stones and pebbles and gold with the same eyes, he is a self-realized soul. Even in the case of Purandar Das, I think it was, there is a story, isn't it? He was earlier a very miserly merchant. And then he became a great devotee all of a sudden. And then I think it was Krishna Devarai and Vyasatirtha who were talking. And Krishna Devarai said, this Srinivas Naik, Purandar Das, is going around chanting the Lord's names like this, and he seems to be so much in rapture and ecstasy. He was such a miserly man before, such a worldly man. I don't think really that he is genuine. So Vyasatirtha said, you test him. And then when Purandar Das came, in his bhiksha bowl, he put some jewels. And after some time, they went to their home. And when they reached there, of course, Purandar Das was out. His wife was there. And then they began to ask, what happened? Where is Purandar Das? He said, he has gone to get bhiksha. Gone to get bhiksha? What happened? Yeah, today somebody gave bad bhiksha. They spoiled our bhiksha putting something bad there. What was it they put? Can we see? So she took them to the backyard, and they saw that those jewels were lying there in the garbage. They had thrown them away. And then Vyasatirtha looked at Krishna Devarai and said, now you see, you have understood that he is genuine. So Purandar Das and his wife, they thought these jewels to be something that was so contaminating that they didn't even accept that bhiksha. They just threw it away. So why was Purandar Das able to do that? because he was experiencing something much higher. He gave up something to get something more. Devotees are very intelligent. They are perfect traders. They know what to trade for what. At a very cheap price, they get something that is very valuable. Which businessman in the world can do this? Sometimes, people in this world meet sannyasis or other devotees who have renounced the world, and they sometimes praise them and they say, "Oh, you have given up so much." Or sometimes they criticize them and said that you are a fool because you have given up so much. You had so much money, you had this and you gave it up. And the reply to them is that we have just given up a little money, a small job, some house, a few family members, but you have given up something much greater. What is that? You have given up God. So you are the greatest renouncer, the greatest tyagi. We have just renounced a few things of this world, but you have renounced the Lord of all creation, who is the source of all the universes. So you are actually the great renunciant. So you have given up everything, not we. Actually, what is this concept of renunciation? It is a falsehood. It is a misnomer. There is no such thing as renunciation. After all, what can you renounce in this world? You can only renounce that which belongs to you, isn't it? There is no point in you renouncing something that doesn't belong to you. If I come to your house, I travel with Narahari Chaitanya Prabhu in his car, nice car, and I tell him, "Narahari Chaitanya Prabhu, I renounce this car." You know, he will look at me and tell me, "What are you talking about? It's not your car that you have to renounce it." You know, and I go to his house and tell Narahari Prabhu, "I renounce this fridge. I renounce this home, this wonderful flat. I renounce it." So what is the meaning of this renunciation? When I don't own something, there's no question of renouncing it. So we own nothing in this world. So what can we renounce? What is this renunciation we talk about? This renunciation is nothing but giving up the false sense of ownership and controllership in this world. That's the only thing we can renounce. And in return for giving up this dream, this false idea of ownership, Krishna gives us something that is inconceivably great and pleasurable, which is beyond our imagination. So devotees, therefore, do not mind if they have to give up something in order to obtain God. The atheists, on the other hand, the materialistic people, don't mind giving up God to live in a dream world. The whole civilization today is based upon this dream. It's based on a false premise that we are enjoyers, controllers, proprietors. This whole advancement of material civilization is simply making things more complex. It is making living entities entangled in the bondage of birth and death. It increases our so-called luxuries of life, which are actually unwanted things. And life goes on. In the name of material progress, we accumulate more and more unnecessary things. Things that I don't need. But I delude myself to think that I need them very much. I think that they are necessities. And the civilization that thrives on creating artificial necessities that are not actually necessities, that civilization cannot sustain. It cannot be a happy civilization. So the whole world today is oriented simply towards creating of anarthas, unwanted things. And by blindly, madly pursuing these unwanted things in life, we dissipate, we waste our precious human energy that is meant for self-realization, and we divert it into useless things. For example, in the recent today's, yesterday's papers, few days, we hear news that America wants to renew efforts to go to the moon. There is a phrase that he's trying for the moon. That means he's trying for something impossible. There's a phrase like that in English. So the Americans now, don't want simply to go to the moon. They want to use the moon as a stepping stone to go to Mars. So they're making all these plans, and they will spend billions and billions of dollars, and perhaps many lives will be lost. And what are they going to do after going there? Srila Prabhupada said, the same eating, sleeping, mating and defending will go on there also. It's not that when they go to the moon or they go to Mars, they're going to do something new. The same fighting will go on there. The same quarreling, the same politics, the same struggle for survival will go on over there. So why waste valuable human energy just for this purpose? What are we going to achieve out of this? The goal of human life is self-realization. The goal of human life is not simply to wander here and there all over the universe. Tasyaiva hetoh prayateta kovido na labhyate yat dukhavat anyatah sukham kalena gabhira ramhasa. Narad Muni describes to Vyasadeva that what is the point in wandering all over the universe when you cannot obtain the ultimate goal of life from Brahmaloka to Pataloka? Rather, one should aspire for that which cannot be obtained by wandering here and there. And that is Krishna consciousness, God realization. So, the pure Vedic civilization focused upon creating a culture where people could find time and energy to pursue devotional practices. Instead, today, in the name of progress, we are simply sapping people of their most valuable energy. So here Kunti Maharani says, therefore, my dear Lord, you are not available for those who have all this hankering. Somebody who is just all the time obsessed with the idea of increasing wealth, increasing enjoyment. You are not meant for such people, my dear Lord. You are meant only for the Akinchana. So who is an Akinchana? An Akinchana is one who is materially impoverished, in the words of Srila Prabhupada. Who has no possessions, who has no assets. Of course, if somebody is poor, that is not necessarily a qualification. It is not that one becomes spiritually advanced by being poor. There may be many poor people who have intense hankering for wealth and enjoyment. What is the use then of that poverty? And there are wealthy people who may be totally renounced from their wealth, and they may use everything in Krishna's service. So it is not exactly simply physically being poor, but it is the consciousness, the mentality. One who is freed from this hankering for material enjoyment, this hankering for trying to obtain the things of this world, he is an Akinchana. At another place, in the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada describes, Akinchana means one who gives up all materialistic plan making. In this world, everyone is busy making plans. 5-year plan. Everyone has their own plans. Business plans, family plans. Everything, everyone is busy planning. The cat is planning, the dog is planning. Everyone has their plans, but they all center around eating, meeting, eating, sleeping, mating and defending. That's all. But a devotee is one who simply makes plans for Krishna's pleasure. So such is an Akinchana. And she says here, Kunti Maharani says, that because the Akinchanas are so wonderful, because they have nothing in the world except Krishna, so Krishna actually becomes a property of the devotee. Yesterday we were just talking briefly with some devotees, and we were mentioning how Krishna sells himself to his devotees. Tulasi dalamatrena jalasya chulukena va vikrinite sumatmanam bhaktebhyo bhakta vatsalaha. Just for a little tulasi leaf and a little palm full of Ganges water, when it was offered with love and devotion to the Lord, he is so much touched by that offering of love that he sells himself to the devotees. Bhaktebhyaha. Because he is bhakta vatsalaha. Because he is very dear to the devotees, and the devotees are dear to him. So Krishna becomes a property of the devotee. That is the meaning of akinchana vittaya. Vitta means property. At the same time, the devotee also becomes the property of God. Tava asmi, I am yours. This is the devotee sentiment. The Mayavadis say that we are gods. We are all gods. But actually the devotee says, I am God's, capital apostrophe and S. That means I belong to God. I am God's property. That is the devotee's idea. Whereas the Mayavadi says, I am God. So the devotee's conception is, my dear Lord, I am yours. In the Ramayana also, there is an episode when Vibhishan, he leaves Ravan. There is a showdown in Ravan's court. When Ravan gets a little nervous now that the monkey army is amassed on the other side of the seashore, and it's such a huge army, millions and millions of these monkeys are there, and Ravan is thinking what to do now. Hanuman has already come and created havoc and gone, and Ravan has got a taste. If one of them can do this, then millions are going to come. What's going to happen? And Ravan starts becoming fearful. He calls an assembly. All his commanders and everybody comes. And even the great Kumbhakarna has to be awakened. Of course, it is a Herculean task to wake him up, because it is the wrong time to wake him. It is not his scheduled time of awakening. He is awake only for a few days in a year. The rest of the year he sleeps. So in front of everybody, Vibhishan advises, admonishes Ravan to give up this mad idea of trying to enjoy Sita. He says, you return Sita Devi to Lord Ram, otherwise you will be destroyed. And Ravan, he abuses Vibhishan and calls him a traitor. Vibhishan is unable to stand this insult. And he leaves. And along with him, four of his Rakshasa friends, followers, they also come. They ascend by the skyways, they fly into the sky, and across the ocean they come to the point where the monkey army is there. Lord Ram is also there, Lakshman is there. And as soon as the Vanar Sena, they spot these four or five people in the sky, and Vibhishan is there standing at a height in the sky, because they have all these yogic siddhis, so they can travel through the sky. Immediately they jump up and pull him down, and they start beating him, boxing him, punching him. Finally somebody says, Hanuman, Sugriva, everybody come. No, 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 don't beat him. What should we do? So there is a difference of opinion among them. Somebody says, no, no, let's kill him. Somebody says, no, let's capture him. Somebody says, he's a spy. So different opinions are going on. Finally they say, let us settle this matter by taking it to Lord Ram. Lord Ram interviews Vibhishan. Vibhishan comes in a very sincere mood of surrender, saying, I am yours. Now, I have burnt my bridges. I can no longer go back to my brother. I have no more interest in Lanka. And now here, I am simply surrendered to you. So Ram, after all, is the Supreme Lord. He is situated in everybody's heart. So he understood that Vibhishan's spirit of surrender was genuine. And at that time he delivered his judgment. And he said, Sakrit eva prapannuya tavasmiti chayachate abhyam sarvada tasmai dadam etat vratam mama. He said, my dear friends, even if one time, sakrit means even once, eva prapannaya, if somebody comes and surrenders to me, the word prapanna means surrender, prapadyate, prapannaha. If even one somebody comes to me and surrenders utterly to me, tava asmi iti yachate, with the plea, tava asmi, I am yours, then abhayam sarvada tasmai dadami, I grant him a boon, I give him a gift. What is that gift? Fearlessness. Abhayam sarvada, that he will forever be fearless in this world. That is the boon that I will give such a person. Etad vratam mama. That is my vrata. That is my vow, O Hanuman. Please know that I can never reject anyone who has taken my shelter. So So Vibhishan has come here, he has surrendered completely to me, and he has said, Tava Asmi, I am yours. Therefore I cannot give him up. And all the monkeys hang their head down in shame, and they understand the glory of the Lord and the Lord's devotees. So therefore, not only is the Lord the property of the devotee, but the devotee is also the property of the Lord. This is a beautiful reciprocal relationship that takes place between the devotee and the Lord. It is a relationship of love. Therefore, we can see that although the devotee is akinchana, he has nothing, but actually he has everything. Why has he everything? Because he has Krishna. He may have not a single penny in this world, but because he has Krishna, who is the source of all opulences, he is Bhagavan. The very word Bhagavan means the possessor of all Bhaga. Bhaga means opulences. So therefore, he is the richest person. Prabhupada, for those who are fundraisers in ISKCON, Prabhupada gave a very interesting tip. He was talking about how Mahatma Gandhi, Mohandas Karamchand Gandhi, was very intelligent. He said, G.D. Birla, he didn't go and ask him for donations. He didn't go for his pocket. He said, M.K. Gandhi went for G.D. Birla's heart. When he got his heart, the pocket automatically was there. You see, so, the devotee doesn't need wealth, but he has the owner of all wealth. So he has Krishna, he is the property of Krishna. Krishna dite paro tomara shakati ache. The devotee prays, Ami to kangala Krishna Krishna boli dhao pache pache. That my dear Gosai, Vaishnav Gosai, I am just a beggar and I am running after you saying Krishna Krishna. Please give me Krishna. You have Krishna. You have the strength to give me Krishna. Krishna is your property. So please give me Krishna. I am begging you. So this is the potency of the pure devotee of the Lord. He possesses, he owns Krishna. Krishna becomes his property. So the devotee is never poor. The devotee is very wealthy because he owns the Lord and the source of all opulence. In fact, those who do not have Krishna, however rich they may be, they are actually poor. They are deena. Deenaheena. Deena means very poor. There is a story about this. Because Krishna is a friend of the akinchanas, friend of the poor. So he is called Deenabandhu or Deenanath. You know the story of Deenabandhu? Have you heard? Prabhupada also told this beautiful story. Prabhupada said so many beautiful short stories like this. Once upon a time there was a small boy. He only had his mother, very poor, and he was living in his Gurukul. And one time the Guru wanted to perform some ceremony, and he asked all his students for the Dakshina. And all the students went home. Many of them were from very rich families, so they were able to bring back a lot of Dakshina. Somebody brought some jewels, some gold, some this and that. But this boy went home to his mother, and mother said, my dear child, I can give you nothing. I have absolutely nothing with me to give you. So the boy started crying, so what to do? I have to go back to my guru with Dakshina, so I need something. So mother said, I have heard that Deenabandhu resides in the forest. We are Deena, and the Lord is Deenabandhu, and he resides. You ask your friend Deenabandhu, and he will give you. Oh, Deenabandhu, where does he stay? I have heard he stays in the forest. The great sages also go there to try to obtain him. So, okay. The advantage of being a small child is that a child is very faithful. Whatever he is told, he accepts. Not like us adults. We'll ask 10 questions. Why? What is the proof? Who has seen? You know, we'll ask many, many questions. I want it in writing. No? So, is there a witness? So many things we want. But little children, they have no such problem. If the elders tell them, immediately they accept on faith. That's why the four Kumaras don't want to grow up. They want to remain eternally as 5-year-old children. little boys, and they wander around as Digambaras. You know Digambara? Their clothes, Ambar. Ambar means clothes, and Dik means direction. So the only clothes are the four directions. That means they don't wear any clothes. Small boys like this, 5-year-old boys. So in all his innocence, this boy accepted his mother's statement, and on the way to the Gurukul, he had to pass through the forest, and he started shouting out for Deenbandhu. Deenbandhu, Deenbandhu, where are you? So he shouted for some time, Deenbandhu didn't come. So he started getting a little depressed, thinking, what happened? Deenbandhu is not answering my call. And after some time, he started crying. He sat down there, and suddenly one very beautiful boy came through the bushes. And as soon as this boy saw him, his face lighted up. A very, very beautiful boy. And he had a very dark complexion. But it was the complexion of the monsoon cloud. And his hair was very, very black and curly and beautiful. And he had a peacock feather in his hair. He was wearing a lightning-like golden dhoti. And he had a wonderful flower garland around his neck that reached down to his knees. And he was wearing a very precious jewel at his chest. And he had teeth that were like pearls and eyes that were like lotus petals. And he was walking so gracefully. And at this time, this boy was wondering, who is this? Who was he? Krishna. So, yes, what is your name? Are you Deenbandhu? So the boy replied, yes, I am Deenbandhu. Oh, very nice. My mother has told me about you. So, yes, you want anything? So, yes, you be my friend. So, yes, surely. So they were playing together. And then he said, now it is time for me to go. I have to take Guru Dakshina. But I have nothing with me. And my mother said that Deenbandhu will give you Guru Dakshina to take for your guru. So can you give me something? So Deenbandhu said, definitely. Here, you take this. And he gave him one little small pot which contained some yogurt, curd. Take this as Guru Dakshina. So the little boy became very happy, very innocent. He went to the guru, and here there were heaps of presents, Dakshina there, all valuable things, silk and everything. And here was the little boy who comes with a small little bowl of curd. The guru saw this, he put it in his hands. What? This is Dakshina you're bringing? And he said, no, what's the use of this? And that little vessel fell down. And the curd that was inside spilled. And the boy picked it up. And to his astonishment, the teacher saw that although there was curd spilled on the floor, the vessel was full. So he was astonished. He took it up and again it slipped from his hand. It fell down. Again the curd fell out, but still the vessel was full. It happened a third time. And this time the guru understood, this is not an ordinary vessel. And this is not ordinary curd. So immediately his tone of voice changed. He said, my dear boy, come. Where have you got this from? So my friend gave you, what is your friend's name? Deenbandhu. What does he look like? He described. And the guru then slapped his forehead and said, my God, this boy is not an ordinary boy. And then he embraced this boy and said, yes, you have given me the best dakshina. So that was curd yogurt from the spiritual world. Everything in the spiritual world is inexhaustible. It is unending. But here things finish. So we can understand how Krishna as Deenbandhu supplies the needs of all his devotees. So the devotees don't have to worry. So even if somebody is Deen from a material point of view, he is actually wealthy because he has Deenbandhu with him. But if somebody doesn't have Krishna, then actually he is Deen. Srila Prabhupada explained many times that all the material assets that we may have are like zeros. Our bank balance is 10. Our big house, another 0. Our car, another 0. Our beautiful bodily features, another 0. Our high education, 10. Our prestige and name and fame in the society, another 0. So all these things, 0, 0, 0, 0. So Prabhupada explained, 5 zeros, one after the other. What is the value? 0. 1,000 zeros one after the other, what is the value? 0. But he said, if you add 1 before the zeros, then everything becomes very large. Then with every zero that you add, it becomes 10 times more. So everything becomes wonderful. And that one is Krishna. So this is the science of 1 and 0. Binary arithmetic. Those of you who are software professionals, you know. Binary digit. This is the software binary code we should know. Huh? Those, I don't know anything about programming, but I think you work in the 1 and 0, 1 and 0, you have to do binary language, correct? So this is our binary language. 1 is Krishna, 0 is everything else. So if you have 1, if you have Krishna, then everything else that we have becomes valuable. Because we use it for Krishna's service. But if we don't have that 1, everything else is simply 1 big 0. Now here comes the catch. That sometimes, in order for that 1 to come, Krishna wants to take away the zeros. So he thinks, you have so many zeros, you want this 1 here, let me take some of the zeros away. In other words, Krishna sometimes takes away some material things from his devotees. He may leave them in poverty sometimes. We see that in the Bhagavatam and also the Mahabharata, Yudhishthira Maharaj one time tells Krishna, actually this appears in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. This morning also we briefly touched on this in the Bhagavatam class. Yudhishthira Maharaj asked Krishna the question, my dear Keshava, you know very well that we are completely dependent on you. And from many years, right from childhood we have been. And yet, see what has happened to our life. Our kingdom has been taken away. Our wife has been disrobed and insulted in an open assembly. Our cousins, the Kauravas, have tried to kill us on innumerable occasions right from childhood. And even when we were staying in that house, our house was attempted to be burnt down. One after the other, great calamities are coming in our life. Why is this happening? At that time, Krishna spoke that verse. Yachyaham anugrami harishye tab dhanam shanai. My dear Yudhishthira, please know that when I offer my mercy to my devotee, then I take everything away from that devotee. Harishye. Harishye means haram, to take away. I take away my things, I take away devotee's possessions so that he will ultimately have no other shelter but me. And he will depend on me entirely. So this is something that worries many people. So Prabhupada concludes by saying, therefore Krishna is very dangerous. Prabhupada says in the purport like that. He makes a sentence. And many people are afraid to come to Krishna. Because you think coming to Krishna is dangerous because he takes away everything. Whereas going to Shiva, very nice. He gives. In fact, this question or this dilemma is not something new. In the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam also, Parikshit Maharaj asks the same question to Shukadeva Goswami. He says, my dear Shukadeva Goswami, it is said that when one surrenders to the Supreme Lord Sri Hari, he takes away everything from his devotees. But Lord Shiva is very magnanimous. When somebody takes his shelter, he gives everything to him. All kinds of opulences come to the worshipper of Lord Shiva. So why does this happen? So Shukadeva Goswami explains, I will tell in very brief, for those who want, you should read the Bhagavatam yourself and see the wonderful explanation of Shukadeva Goswami. Shukadeva Goswami says, see, Lord Shiva is the husband of Durga Devi, who is the goddess of this material energy. She is Mahamaya. She is the one who is keeping everyone in illusion. And she can give all kinds of opulences to the people of this world. But have you thought about how Lord Shiva himself lives under a tree without any house even? He doesn't even have his own house. He doesn't have some newly ownership house that he has constructed. He has no house. He has no proper clothes. He just wears some deer skin. He covers his body with ashes. He has snakes and skulls around his neck. Sometimes he dances like a madman. Why does he do this? Because he's a great devotee of the Lord. And what about Krishna? Krishna has nothing to do with the three modes of material nature. Krishna wants his devotees to become transcendentally situated. So anything that is coming in the way of the devotees surrendering utterly to him, Krishna removes. So Krishna takes away what he understands to be impediments to the path of the devotional progress of his devotee. And therefore, Krishna bestows mercy on his devotees by taking them away and lifting them to the higher platform and giving them a gift that is so priceless that the beneficiaries of Lord Shiva's materialistic benedictions cannot even imagine. It is very easy for Lord Shiva to grant material benedictions because his wife herself is the controller of that. Durga Devi Swami is Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva can grant because that is his service he is doing for such people who are in tamoguna, in the mode of ignorance. But Krishna, being transcendental, he brings his devotees to the transcendental platform. So why should he give his devotees such benedictions that will only entangle them further in this material creation and prolong that period of suffering by continuing to extend themselves in the cycle of birth and death? In this way, Maharaj went on to explain very beautifully how Krishna's taking away everything is actually a sign of his mercy, and it is for the ultimate benefit of everyone. Srila Prabhupada then says that basically, when one's assets are taken away, we should understand that to be Krishna's mercy. We should not grieve for it. That is a test. And actually, sooner or later, all our belongings are going to be taken away. Ultimately, at death, our possessions are going to be separated from us. But if we become very Krishna conscious, then we will not grieve for this, because we know that Krishna is taking away our assets at the time of death, but he is giving himself to us. So what a bargain. Can you imagine? Imagine the richest person in the world, Bill Gates. How much must he have? A few billion dollars? So if you are able to purchase Krishna for a few billion dollars, what is it? Nothing. And most of us don't have billion dollars. We may have just a few lakhs, a few crores of rupees at the most. So is that a big price to pay for obtaining Krishna? So when Krishna takes away our bank balance when we die, he separates us from our bank balance and our wealth. But Krishna will give himself to us. So why should a devotee fear? Why should a devotee lament about the loss of his possessions or assets? Srila Prabhupada himself gives a very nice instructive story from his own personal life. Srila Prabhupada said, I was only 25 years old when I met my spiritual master. And on the very first meeting, my Guru Maharaj told me that you should preach the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world in English. And I was thinking that no, first I will work, become a rich man in my business, and then use this money for preaching. And even an astrologer told me that I would become one of the wealthiest men in India. And the chances were very bright for that. I was situated as a manager in a very big chemical factory. And then eventually I went on to start my own factory, which was very successful initially. But then later, everything collapsed. And when there was nothing left, I was on the streets. Then I took shelter of Krishna. I surrendered to Krishna that you are my only shelter. I have nothing else now in life. And after that, many years have passed, and I have realized that I was never the loser, that I have gained. Srila Prabhupada, at another time, he was saying that just when I was taking sannyas, I was thinking, I am giving up my children. Prabhupada had several children. And he was thinking, I am giving up my children. But many years down the line, Prabhupada told his disciples, let's see, because I gave up my few children for Krishna's pleasure, so Krishna has given me now thousands of children. All his disciples are his spiritual children. So he had thousands of disciples. He said, now I have thousands of children because I gave up just a few children for Krishna's pleasure. So Prabhupada makes a very important point that when we sacrifice something for Krishna, we are never the loser. We are always the gainer. So we should never lament if there is any loss that comes, materially speaking, in the course of our serving Krishna. There is also the story in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam of the Avanti Brahman. The Avanti Brahman, actually he was a businessman, although he was a Brahmana, very miserly. So miserly that even his family hated him, because he would not give even the basic things that the family needed. And as time passed, by the will of Providence, everything that he owned was either stolen by thieves, confiscated by the king's income tax people, or burnt in fire, or destroyed by the ravages of famine and so on. And eventually he came onto the streets. He became penniless. He had nothing. And all those family members who had tolerated him only because he had some money and he was looking after them, however negligently it was, now they decided, what is the use of this person? He is not even giving us money. So they neglected him. They threw him out of his own house. And he was on the streets. And he experienced intense grief and suffering. And he wandered here and there, trying to understand what was the cause of his suffering. And he began to philosophically introspect. Are other people the cause of my suffering? Is the cause of suffering my destiny? Is the cause of my suffering my stars and planets? Is time the cause of my suffering? Are the devis and devatas the cause of my suffering? And finally he concluded. He said, the cause of my suffering is my own mind. Nothing else but my mind. And what a wonderful statement that is. It is only our mind that perceives something as happiness or distress. We can see this. When two people undergo a similar kind of experience, one person may act in one way, another person may act in a totally different way. So it is our perception that decides whether we will be happy or distressful. And then the Avanti Brahman, he experienced a tremendous sense of renunciation and peace. He totally disconnected himself by the grace of the Lord and became at peace with himself and the world. And he started wandering around. He took sannyas and started wandering around as a bhikshu. And then he sang the bhikshu geet, the song of the mendicant. And in this particular prayer or this song, there is one very important verse that he chanted, which actually is important even in our sampradaya. The sannyasi take sannyas diksha, they also chant this mantra.
Etam sasthaya paratmanishtham adhyasitam purvatamer maharishibhi aham tarishyami durantaparam tamo mukundangri nisheva yaiva.
He prays, etams asthaya paratmanishtham. Now I want to fix myself in the devotional service of Lord Hari. Adhyatitam purvatamer maharishibhi. I want to follow in the footsteps of those great sages and rishis who have also worshipped Krishna in the same way. Aham tarishyami. I shall swim over. I shall cross over. What shall I cross over? Durantaparam. This ocean of material existence which is so difficult to cross. And how shall I do that? by accepting the lotus feet of Lord Mukunda. So therefore, this formula is very, very important for us. That the Avanti Brahman lost everything, but he gained the lotus feet of Krishna. So was he the loser or was he the gainer? It was not before he lost everything that Krishna gave himself to this person. So he was a typical candidate that we can expect here. Akinchana Vittaya. So Krishna became the property of this Akinchana, the Avanti Brahman. Kunti Maharani also says, Nivritta Guna Vrittaye, that Krishna is beyond the three modes. He cannot be affected by this hankering. He is Atmarama, he is Shanta, and he is the Lord of everyone. Kaivalya Pataye Namaha. Once again, she offers her obeisances to him. So, in this way, this wonderful shloka, Kunti Maharani makes this very important point. So, whether we have money or we don't have money, but we should develop the internal renunciation from our property and wealth and try to understand that this is the property of Krishna and it should be used in Krishna's service. And by surrendering to Krishna, tava asmi, when we become the property of Krishna, Krishna will reciprocate and become our property. This is the glorious relationship between the devotees and the Supreme Lord. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Are there any questions or comments? Yes. Yes, the question is that, yes, surely Krishna took away the kingdom from the Pandavas, but he also gave it back. But they ruled it without being sense enjoyers. Yes, that is true. Krishna may give wealth to his devotee if he has confidence that the devotee will not misuse it. Like he gave Sudama. Sudama never asked Krishna for anything, although his wife had sent him there on that mission. But Krishna understood and he gave more wealth to Sudama than anyone can imagine, and Sudama's life was still the same. It never changed. He was not influenced even one little bit by all this wealth and opulence. So when Krishna understood that Sudama is my pure devotee, he will not be affected by wealth, he may give it also. But sometimes he may not give. In his own wisdom, Krishna will decide when to take away, when not to take away, when to give back, when to not give back. Krishna judges everything perfectly. So we know that everything that Krishna does in our life is perfect and complete, and we should see that as his mercy. If Krishna takes away our wealth, it is his mercy. If he gives us back our wealth, that is also his mercy. And if he doesn't give it back, that is also his mercy. So all conditions in life we accept as Krishna's mercy. Yes. Give back. Yes. Much more. Yes. Very correct. So the Pandavas are there, Sudama is there, Prabhupada's own example. And the first installment of Krishna takes away, the second installment he may give it back. Not necessarily, but he may, if he wishes, give back material wealth, if it can be used in his service. And sometimes he may just rest satisfied with giving spiritual wealth and not material wealth. So Krishna in his own perfect judgment will decide. Krishna is free. He can take away, he can give back, he can do what he wants. Right? But yes, that's the point, important point. He did it to Prabhupada also. Instances are more of giving back Well, the Avanti Brahman didn't get it back, but he became devotee, yes. Because Krishna took away, he accepted that in a positive spirit. And he concluded, Tamo Mukundangri Nisheva Yaiva. Now I will serve the lotus feet of Lord Mukunda. So he may give back, he may not give back. For a devotee, the material situation of wealth is not so important. Whether wealth is there, whether Krishna gives it, Krishna takes it away, devotional service will remain. Yes. The question is that Sanatan Goswami and others gave up their wealth, but are there examples of Yukta Vairagya where the devotees of the Lord use that wealth in Krishna's service? The example of the Pandavas is here. They got that wealth back and they ruled according to the principles of Dharma, and Prabhupada's example was also mentioned. So actually the astrological prediction that he would be the wealthiest man in India was fulfilled. Because he had so much wealth, 108 temples all over the world. And, you know, even in France, I think it was in the early days, they would try to make even the bathroom taps made out of all kinds of precious materials for Prabhupada. They would try to make like that. And Prabhupada said, even this is not sufficient if it is done in the proper thing, because it is done keeping in mind Krishna. So he had so much wealth. And when he went to America, only 35 rupees he had, $7 at that time. And Prabhupada used everything in Krishna's service. This is the best example in modern times of Yukta Vairagya. But he never got affected by that. But we should judge our own digestive capacity in handling wealth and other things of this nature. If we are getting affected by controlling too much of wealth and other things, then we should know that we are in a delicate position. So being poor is always safer. Not much danger. So thank you very much. I would have liked to do 5 minutes kirtan, but it's already a little late. So we will stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srimati Kunti Maharani ki jai. Gopremanande.